He also sorted out bureaucratic corruption, in which we see the wealthy buying up property below cost. These may have been officials who belonged either to the palace or to the temple, and their high position gave them the authority to cheat the people from whom they were trying to buy property. There are also indications that the temple lands were being used for private gain. Uru-Enimgina reduced taxes and restored the order of Ningirsu, freeing his people from theft, assault, hunger, and he claims that in doing this, he created their freedom. This may have been a way for the king to redistribute property and power, shifting it from land that had been owned by the temple to the palace. Even though we can't know the exact parameters of temple lands and their authority versus royal lands and authority, surely there must have been increasing friction between these two institutions as the king became more powerful and started to exert economic influence on land ownership that belonged to temples in earlier generations. This inscription also gives us our earliest example of how rulers protect the weak in their society. They do this at the expense of the wealthy. This also has the effect of undermining the power of the wealthy, which supports the king's growing power. We see in Uru-Enimgina's inscription that this is an early indication of the ruler's position as a judge and a lawgiver. If we look beyond the position of the king, we see a common culture in southern Mesopotamia illustrated by the importance of Nippur as the religious center. This permits the city-states in southern Mesopotamia, because they have a common culture, as we see most obviously in religion, to establish a sense of identity. And this identity starts to appear in cities at this time. In addition to the importance of Nippur, another title that suggests a common culture is the title the King of Kish, and it appears first in the early dynastic texts. This title, even though we'll soon find out we don't know what the specifics are about it and how one seemed to acquire it, may have been a sign of cultural accord that showed connection between the cities. The title King of Kish is used in many texts, and it does not mean that whoever held it held authority of more than one city, and certainly did not hold authority over all of southern Mesopotamia. Rather, it's a title that conveys leadership of a military coalition in which cities joined behind one particular ruler in a common cause. How the ruler earned the title is unclear. Probably he had to demonstrate that he was an effective military leader by defeating other rulers or smaller cities. The alliance that followed the King of Kish was loose and probably voluntary. There's certainly no evidence that suggests its membership was created through force, so this indicates to us it was a cooperative organization. The title is used for many centuries after the early dynastic period and becomes one of the honorific titles that shows the legitimacy of the ruler. The phrase King of Kish will appear as late as the 7th century AD. We see that we have a lot of evidence for rulers in the early dynastic period, although it's often not particularly specific in the ways that we would like to know how an early king was chosen and what his functions were. How was kingship passed on from one man to another? Was this a successive dynastic succession? Or was it some other way of choosing a ruler based on merit, perhaps his military skill? We also get evidence for the wives of rulers and their households, and this shows us that the institution of kingship is starting to expand and become thoroughly established in the city. The early dynastic period shows that the main institutions for the city-state and for the office of kingship are established and will continue to be in place for the next millennium. Once an identity grows up around a city, it is very difficult to break down that loyalty. And as we look ahead to future lectures and think about the concept of empire, this loyalty to one's city and to one's ruler will be one of the most difficult concepts to break down. We've also seen that the kings appear not just in inscriptions, but also in images, in their role as builder and performing deeds for the gods. This shows how close the connections between the kings and the gods were, and we can start to identify and consider the ideology that is conveyed in the artistic media, as well as in the written texts. In the next lecture, we will look at the evidence for conflict between cities and their rulers, and we will see that once again the king is linked with the god of the city, even in warfare. The texts that describe these battles always justify them in terms of a divine response through the figure of the king to some aggression on the part of the enemy.